Hello and welcome to SMPD, the podcast where we look back at the cartoons that shaped our childhood. I am Chris Bolton. With me, as always, my cartoon companion, Mr. Mark Williams.
Hello.
And this week, we are looking back at another show that's actually quite late on for our run. Every now and again, we get these kind of very late 90s, early 2000s ones that seem just appropriate for the show. So we decided to look back at Mummies Alive. Probably about the second or third latest show that we've actually looked at. This one's this one's getting up there. Like, I was a fully grown person by the time this was out.
Yeah, I think I'd have been about 14 when this was on.
So I remember first watching it. I would have been around about 18, I guess. I could definitely drive, put it like that.
Right.
I've got a feeling it was round about, it must have been turn of the century. It must have been like 1999, 2000, because it was like early time in uni and me being home for the summer. And I just remember Sky One having this. And then at the time, WWE used to have like, I don't know if they still do them because I'm not current. I haven't watched WWE for ages. They used to have these like hour-long magazine shows, things like Heat and stuff like that. And like, we had Sky Sports, so I didn't really need to watch these. I'd bought Sky Sports specifically for the wrestling. But every morning, they would have this block of kids in inverted commas programming on Sky, which wasn't branded anything. It wasn't like DJ Cat or anything like that. It was just like, oh, it's the summer holidays. The kids are home, so we'll put some kids stuff on. And so they'd have a couple of cartoons, of which Mummies Alive was one. And then it would roll into like Heat, and then it would be Nitro, and then it would be a different one every day. So I ended up, because I was watching these WWE catch-up shows, because like I was home with fuck all to do. So I started off by watching them, and I'd catch like the tail end of an episode of Mummies Alive, and then I'd be actually like, actually, this is not bad. So then I started tuning in a little bit earlier and a little bit earlier. And it got to the point where I was just watching Mummies Alive. I'm kind of predisposed to like this. You know, we've talked across all of the shows on the network about my love for monsters. I love classic monsters. So you stick mummies in the title, I'm in to start with anyway.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I had slightly different baggage with this. So I remember this when it first came about. It was on the show that Fern Cotton used to do on a Saturday and a Sunday morning. I think it was called Dig It. And they used to do like their Disney block cartoons on a Saturday and Sunday morning and some other shit as well. And this was one of theirs. So they had it pretty much as soon as it landed.
Okay.
It was on ITV first, and then it went to Sky, and then it came back to ITV later on, probably 2004, 2005. So I remember watching this first time around. So when this came about, I didn't remember the name of it. As soon as I started looking, I saw the characters, I thought, yeah, I remember this, and I remembered the stories and stuff, so that was fine. But I didn't remember the names of it for whatever reason. So as soon as I came to it, I was like, oh, right, okay, it's this. Mm. And actually, I was predisposed to like this. There are issues with it. It's not perfect. But I'm not going to bury it. I fucking enjoyed it. I wish I got a chance to watch the rest of it.
I've had a great time. I mean, I did say on the episode last week when we were watching Mighty Ducks that, like, because we've recorded two SMPDs back to back, which we don't usually do. We normally do like an SMPD, then something else, an SMPD, because, you know, watching a block of shows to record this takes time, right? So we need that time to be able to watch a certain amount. Like, we're never going to watch a full run of a show. But we like to watch a good couple of hours just to make sure that we've fully got a feel for it and we've refreshed our memory and stuff like that. Trying to watch Mighty Ducks at the same time as watching this was fucking hard, because every time I was watching a Mighty Ducks, I was just like, oh, I wish I'd just rather be watching Mummies Alive, to be honest.
Yeah, and I thought that would kind of be the case, so I didn't do that. I literally went, right, I'm doing Mighty Ducks this week, and then once we've done Mighty Ducks, I can then start on the next one. Mm. Because I knew otherwise I wouldn't want to watch Mighty Ducks.
Yeah, no, I didn't really want to watch Mighty Ducks. And I've still not watched as much of this as I would like to. But then there are like 40-odd episodes, so it's quite difficult. Yeah.
I have 40, and then the last ones are kind of clip shows, aren't they?
Yeah. It ends on a bit of a... It just kind of fizzles out, really.
Well, so I was reading about this today. Apparently, they didn't know they were getting cancelled. They were told they were getting another run. They were going to get to hit 66, they could get syndication. Mm. And then, due to poor numbers, this one, fuck it, and didn't bother. So then the writers went off to do season 3 of Gargoyles.
Yes, I did know it shared some talent with Gargoyles. I was aware of that at the time as well, I think, because I was watching it a couple of years after the fact by the time it had hit Sky. Yeah. What I mostly remember about it when it came out was the toys. I remember seeing the advert for the toys all the fucking time. Like constantly on like, you know, ITV and stuff like that. Then you'd have loads of adverts for toys around about Christmas time. And it was because of the theme tune to the show, right? You'd have the advert for the toys and you'd have the mummies come in on it. And it, even now when you listen to that theme, it kind of sounds like an advert. It sounds like a jingle for an action toy. It really does. Like, and I'm not criticizing the theme. I've been fucking walking around singing it all week. I really like it. But it's got that feel about it, as if like that theme is there for like a 30-second clip to sell, kind of to sell toys. So I remember,
which bizarrely, there weren't that many toys that came out of it, because they were doing them in blocks. So you had the core mummies, and then they did a second run where they brought out the kid and Nefertina.
Yes.
And then apparently they're really difficult to get hold of, whereas the sort of the original ones, the first four they released were quite common. And then I think, again, because they thought they were going to get more of a run, they were kind of staggering it, and then they didn't get to release the rest of them.
It's a shame, because I remember the toys. I mean, I never had any, but I remember also seeing them in like Toys R Us and stuff and always thinking they looked quite cool. But then again, but I'm predisposed to like them. They're kind of the look of the mummies as well. I remember them doing I specifically remember with the toys, they had the real Ghostbusters thing where there was like scary face and there was normal face.
Yeah, the two-face thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just thought they looked really cool, because, you know, the mummies themselves, the character design of them, like, it would have been very easy. Like, I know when they're in their armor, they look like your kind of Tutankhamun kind of ceremonial garb sort of thing. But generally, they are like rotting flesh and bandages. Like, they don't shy away from that. They look really, like, obviously it's a, you know, a sanitized version of that, but they look quite cool. So I remember seeing the toys and being like, this is quite cool. What is this? And I think that was probably part then of what was in my head when I was kind of dipping into the show a few years later. I was like, oh, it's that thing that I saw the toys of when I was queuing for a fucking Teletubby for my godchildren. Like, it's that thing that I saw.
For my godchildren.
Yeah, fucking right.
We believe you.
Yeah. So I kind of knew what it was. But yeah, I know I enjoyed it first time round. I've never rewatched it since, so I was quite keen to dive back into it, actually. It's been on the list for a little while, but it was one that I've always kind of had my eye on. And it's just kind of the way this has landed, that we happen to have watched it so close behind Mighty Ducks. And that's not done the former show any favours at all, because the two definitely belong in the same stable. Like, I know these are mummies, not anthropomorphic crime fighters, but they kind of... The core idea of the show is the same, that kind of fish out of water crime fighting team. It's just this, everything that the Mighty Ducks tries to do, this does better. Like, it's
not necessarily everything. The animation was better in Mighty Ducks.
Yeah, okay, but then Mighty Ducks is Disney. So and this is Deke. So you know, like, the animation is what it is. I don't think it's terrible. I've done
Of it which aren't great.
Yeah. I've done a little bit
ironically,
of a deep dive
when they're
animation.
Doing the when they're animating the mummies, which and the monsters and stuff, it's really good. It's when they're animating people, it really suffers. Like, mouths don't move properly, and they run like fucking toddlers and things like that. So that when they're actually doing the main characters, the main cast, it's all really, really good. Mm. It's just the incidental stuff which there's too much of to not notice.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's always a good benchmark for animation if you look how well people are handled. And it's part of the reason why, you know, in the early days of computer animation and with Pixar especially, they just didn't do that. They were just like, no, we're not doing people, because we're too used to seeing people move. And as people, sort of our movements, you know, we get little idiosyncrasies, each of us, that represent our personalities within our movements as well. And that's really difficult to capture for an animator. Yeah. So unless you're looking at, like, you know, like Disney have nailed it from day one. You know, you go all the way back to Snow White and look at the way she moves. But that's because those artists were literally studying performers and drawing them. It was almost like, you know, life drawing for them. They did the same thing when they were animating
animals.
And
even if you go further back, even if you go back further than Snow White, if you look at when you had the early Mickeys, like Steamboat Mickey and stuff like that, even though it's an anthropomorphic mouse, the way the arms move, the way the spine bends, and so the character moves as a whole. It's a lot more nuanced, and I think even that, going back as far as that was, it's a lot better than some of the stuff that came after because the attention to detail that went into it.
Yeah, definitely. So I think, you know, I think the animation in this is functional. I think it's better than functional. I think it's really good. I think the action sequences especially are handled very, very well. And not just from an animation perspective, just in terms of just the direction as well and narratively, they're all, like, there's quite a lot of suspense in this, in their action sequences as well. Like, they know how to handle it. The music is fucking great in this show.
Yes,
the music's really, really good. So all of that comes together great. But you're right, in the slower moments, some of the lip syncing and stuff like that is not great, but you know, it's fine. It's definitely not the worst we've seen. It's very, it's very typical for something like Deke, you know, where you got to bear in mind again, this isn't Disney where we've got megabucks to throw behind it, and even when we're shipping things out, you know, if it takes a bit longer to do, it takes a bit longer to do. This is Deke, and we've got multiple properties running at once. We're trying to sell multiple toys. You know, everything's being farmed out to a different animation house. It's all like, it's a fucking sausage factory. So you know, it's not terrible. It could have been a lot worse, but you know, I think in terms of everything else, when I say like everything Mighty Ducks tries to do, this does better. Like, it doesn't have the smugness of Mighty Ducks. I think
the storytelling is infinitely better.
The storytelling's way better, like so much better. I actually think the overarching story is really well done here. It's all cliched as hell. Like, everything, there's nothing original here. Everything is a trope. But they approach them properly. They treat them with respect. You know, they do put a reasonably fresh spin on them as well. You know, the fact that they're mummies rather than aliens or turtles or whatever.
Yeah.
They do manage to find a little bit of a fresh spin on it. But then, as we've seen with Mighty Ducks, you know, they're relying on the fact that the mummies are so different and so, like, not used to our society. Like, that fish out of water, that's where the humor is. Whereas in Mighty Ducks, it was a case of they were constantly making gags, like they were making pop culture gags as though they belonged in our society, and that doesn't work. So they've understood that straight away with Mummies. That's not to say the gags are particularly great. They're not, but no, they're not bad awful, either, you know.
Some of them are pretty poor, but again, they kind of fit, and I think that's what we talked about last week with Mighty Ducks, is that, as I said, they're so fucking smug, and the fourth wall breaking and stuff like that. It doesn't land because we've seen so much of that done so much better. So by the time you get to this, you don't get that in Mummies Alive. Mummies Alive, it's very much, they're making situational jokes, which is fine. That's where the humor works. But it's no, they're not sort of trying so hard that it's no, they're sort of stopping what they're doing, looking directly down the barrel of the camera and saying, this is a fucking joke, kids, you got to laugh.
Yeah.
It's just, if it lands, it lands. If it doesn't land, we move on to the next thing. Because that's not the point of it. Whereas Mighty Ducks spent so much time trying to nail the jokes that actually sometimes you forgot it was supposed to be an adventure show.
Yeah.
And you don't hear.
No, you don't. This knows exactly what it is from day one. And it doesn't try to step outside of its box ever. It knows exactly what it's doing. We've seen this show a million times before.
Yeah.
We've seen it a million times after. It's not the best, but it's far from the worst. And I'll take that because actually I really like this kind of show. Like, we grew up on this kind of show. That's the point.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
You know, and the fact that you can then throw in some elements of, you know, mummies and get some Egyptian gods in there as well. And you get all the kind of classic action adventure tropes that were very popular at this time because the mummy was a thing. Like, mummies seemed to be everywhere in the late 90s for a little while.
Yes.
So it fit there as well. And then, like I say, it wasn't particularly grotesque or scary, but it didn't shy away from that either. Like, when the mummies are like putting their scary faces on, they're quite grotesque, and you know, you get
they're
the
quite
whole
intimidating.
They are quite, and you get the whole opening sequence at the start as well, where they disturb the tomb and stuff, and it's all everything kind of works. You know, there's nothing as scary as Mum-Ra, but they are definitely not. They're not cuddly, then, shall we say?
No, that's it. And I think the thing that let it down for me was probably the villain, because he wasn't dastardly enough. And I think that's the thing I kept coming back to with Mum-Ra. Was when every time you saw Scarab, he's like, oh well, yeah, he's fucking Rita Repulsa on steroids. he wasn't fucking scary, and it was the schemes almost seemed a little bit harebrained at times. And I think that was probably my biggest problem with a lot of the narrative, was that I just didn't see the level of threat. It wasn't really there.
He's definitely more Skeletor than Mum-Ra. You're right. He's definitely more kind of blundering.
Yeah,
I get that. I think there's a problem there with the character from its inception, I think, isn't there? Because he's more of a kind of a scheming, two-faced.
Seems a bit more of a stooge to an overlord.
Definitely. But he kind of, just in his manner as well, like he's not, like Mum-Ra, when he becomes Mum-Ra the Everliving, is a big beefy dude that's going to be able to slap you down. And like, I know, obviously, he powers up as well the same way that the mummies do. But in general, when you talk about his schemes and stuff like that, if you kind of think all the way back to when they're in ancient Egypt, his whole scheme is very duplicitous. It's not a show of force. He's not trying to overthrow anyone with force. He's duplicitous. He's very much a kind of Jafar character. That's what he reminds me of.
And
you know, not just because of the setting, but he's definitely got that kind of, you know, Grand Vizier kind of thing about him, where he's actually the guy pulling the strings, and he's had enough, so he's just going to usurp the king, and that is his whole plan, right? So I think that's the problem, is he's more of a cerebral villain, you know, when actually what we've got is a team of fucking supernatural warriors who want to kick the shit out of everything. So
yes,
cerebral villains, not what they need. Like, giant fucking monster smackdown is what they need.
And that was, so I mean, that's what I kept comparing to Mum-Ra, because he wasn't anywhere near, but that's where the sort of the Power Rangers thing came in. So you have this sort of scheming, always up to something, always plotting to do the same thing every week, just in a slightly different way, and then surrounded by an army of fucking red shirts, effectively. Just fucking putty men in mummy form who just get beaten up and sort of broken in half every week.
I mean, they are exactly that, and I think that, you know, the Power Rangers comparison is very fair. It's one that I drew almost immediately in the first episode as well, you know, from not just from the putty men,
the powering up sequences as well.
Oh yeah, massively. It's very, it's Power Rangers slash Voltron, really, isn't it? Like, they never form a giant unit, but the way they kind of call on the power of Ra and all the armor snaps onto them and stuff, it is very, very, you know, it's morphing time, basically. I don't think you can avoid that, though, in this era.
No, I don't think you can either.
You know, when you're an action cartoon or an action show at all aimed at children, and you're past the early to mid-90s, you live in the post-Power Rangers world. It's as simple as that.
Well, that's the only way to avoid that is if they don't have the powering up, but they're just always in that form, a la Thundercats.
Yes.
Whereby, with the exception of Lionel with Sword of Omens, everybody else is just always fucking on.
Yes, yeah.
And by on, I mean on fucking steroids. But no, that's the only way to get around that. And I think that you're right. By the time we get to this was 97, I think it was. So, yeah, Power Rangers has been a thing for quite a while. We'd had Voltron before that. There were other shows that were doing the same thing, all sort of the Saban stuff, like the VR Troopers and things like that. They were all doing the same thing as well. So it kind of fit that mold where you're thinking, okay, well, we want to make a show that kids are going to watch. It's a bit educational. There's a little bit of history in there. Okay, it's the names are changed and stuff like that, but they're learning about ancient Egypt and the pharaohs and the various gods and things like that. That's all fantastic. But we need the tooling up sequence, because that's what kids expect in an action show now. So you can kind of see why they've done it.
Yeah.
And also, runtime-wise, it adds it sometimes takes 30 seconds off what you need to animate every week.
Totally, because you just use the same sequence every single week.
Well, exactly. So you've animated it once, and then that's 30 seconds you're going to do next week.
Yeah.
It fit, and I think it was very noticeable very early on. So that first episode, it's sort of, there were that type of element hit you like a brick. But I didn't mind it, and I think sometimes I get a bit pissed off when you have sequences like this which are repeated every week. I think when we looked at VR Troopers and things like that, that was one of the things that bugged me, is that I know why they do it. It's an economy of scale, because once you shoot it once, you can reuse it, and that's all fine, I get that. But as somebody in their 40s now looking back at it, you look and think, fuck me, that's boring, because I've seen that. Like, no, if I've watched five episodes in a day, if I've watched five episodes back to back, that's like 5 minutes worth of footage that I've seen so many fucking times. No. So it bugs me, but I'm not sure why it didn't in this one.
I think I can hazard a guess, because
probably
I know,
because it's cooler.
It's exactly that. I know where you're coming from with it. It can be boring if it's done poorly, is the thing. But you know, if you think about this has been a thing since since time immemorial, right? Like, this was a thing in Thundercats, this was a thing in He-Man, this was a thing in Thunderbirds and Stingray, this was a thing in Batman 66, right? These were these repeated tooling up sequences were a thing. Now, the ones you remember are the ones that are done very well. They generally very over-stylized, come accompanied by a catchphrase, and come accompanied by, you know, a very memorable music sting as well. This one is no different. We get, as bad as the pun is, we get Let's Kick Tut, or By the Power of Ra. Yeah, we get one of the two, usually By the Power of Ra, and then once
I think By the Power of Ra is when they tool up, and then Let's Kick Tut is the end of it, where they actually launch the fight.
Yes, that's what it is, right? So you've got that. You've got the kind of, I mean, not quite, but almost anime style behind the tooling up as well. You've got kind of this kind of double layered parallax scroll effect in the background. It's very Japanese. It's quite Pokemon in places.
So
it looks really cool. The mummies themselves look really cool as well, and you know, all the armor snapping on and stuff like that. And you know, particularly, you know, when you get like the snakes wrapping around them and stuff like that, it all looks really, really cool. And so I think that's why it doesn't bother you compared to something, you know, like Viatra was, where it's not very good, where you just say, oh, for fuck's sake, it's this. Because you've got to sit through that again. Yeah. And it wasn't very good the first time, so you're not bothered about it the second time, you know?
That's probably it.
So I think that's what it is. I think this one is done very well, you know? And we've mentioned the music a few times now, so it is worth mentioning that not all of the music, but a great deal of the incidental music as well, you know, is done by the same kind of talent that was scoring things like Power Rangers and X-Men and things like that at this time as well. So it was Ron Wasserman that does the main theme, and he also did Power Rangers.
Oh, he went by the name Raw then, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. But he also did Power Rangers and he also did X-Men. So it's like you've got the guy. You know, and if you want an action show tune, you've got the guy. So that helps. I think... It's unfortunate that this didn't land, right? And it didn't land.
Yes.
I don't really know why, because I think there's a lot of talent involved, and I think everybody fully understands what they're doing, as opposed, again, to Mighty Ducks last week, where it kind of felt at times like nobody really knew what the fuck was going on or what it was.
Yeah.
This feels like everyone involved knows exactly what they're doing, and they've brought their absolute A-game to it. You know, even down to things like we've talked about the overarching story already in the writing, but even like it's the little incidental character moments. Well, they're not incidental, they're actually quite important, but the type of thing that most cartoons will gloss over. There's the things like with Jakal and his family, and the fact that like the reason he's acting as like this father figure to the prince is because like he doesn't know what happened to his family because he died. And so that's really interesting, because normally you get the flip side of that, right? You get, oh, my family died, so I'm going to avenge them. This is the complete opposite. It's like, well, I left them. They had to survive on their own.
There's that part of it, and also the fact that he was supposed to be looking after the prince. The prince was going off to train with him, and instead Scarab lured him away and murdered him. So there's that guilt that comes into it as well.
Yeah.
This whole thing of this character, there are layers to this character which you don't generally see in cartoons, even at this time where they were becoming a lot more sophisticated and they were becoming a lot cleverer. You didn't often see it by this point. And I think that it's a real shame it didn't land. I think the only thing I can think of is, as I said last week with Mighty Ducks, we'd already deja'd this view quite a lot.
We had.
And because this didn't look as polished and as good as other things that were around at the time, possibly because it was a bit learny and not quite, you know, fighty enough, people might have just looked at it and gone, yeah, but it doesn't look that great, or it's not Power Rangers, or in the case of the late ones, it's kind of Gargoyles, and it's not really as good as Gargoyles. And I just think people, for whatever reason, people have looked at it unfairly, and they've judged it without watching it, and that's why the ratings were low, and that's why it got cancelled.
There are a lot of unfair comparisons, I think. Yeah, Gargoyles is the obvious one in tone. It's very similar to Gargoyles in its tone. It is quite gothic and quite dark. So again,
I think thematically as well, there's the whole thing of, you know, warriors from a different time, fish out of water, all this type of stuff. I think it lent itself to those comparisons, unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely. There is, as we've mentioned several times already, there are very obvious comparisons to Thundercats, not just through Mum-Ra, but just through the warriors themselves and the team that they form and the young prince being reincarnated. And there's a lot. And look, we did Thundercats very, very early on.
Oh, fuck
right?
Yeah.
But in terms of looking back and rewatching an action show, like, if you try and hold anything up against Thundercats, it's going to struggle because, you know, it's not perfect. But in terms of, like, how to tell this story and tell an overarching story in a cartoon, like, that's one of the best.
Yeah. So, now, interesting, as a sidebar, I was talking with my boss a couple of months ago, and his kids had never seen Thundercats, and he was raving about it. So he showed them. I lent him the first two seasons on DVD, and I think they got about 10 minutes into the first one, and like, what the fuck is this? And weren't interested. And again, it shows that. And we've talked about it so many times, there's some difference in generational watching habits and things like that. But it's just this whole thing of it's long, it's boring, it's slow, there's nothing going on, and they weren't interested. And I think that's part of the problem looking at something like this, looking back at something like this as well, and why this is not that readily available is because people will look at it and go, well, it's not Thundercats, and it's also not necessarily as polished and as good looking as some of the other stuff that I might watch instead, but probably won't bother. So because of that, then we've known it's only available on YouTube. I've not been able to find it legitimately anywhere.
No, me either.
And I think that was disappointing having to watch it on there. But yeah, as you said, if people are looking at things like Thundercats and going, it's not quite right, it's not what I want, it's long and drawn out because it's actually telling a story over X number of weeks rather than fucking trying to cram it to 30-second TikTok clips, then this hasn't got a chance. And it's so unfortunate because people won't look at this.
No.
They'll gloss over it in favour of other things they're familiar with.
You're right. And I think that brings me neatly onto something I was about to say before we went down the Thundercats rabbit hole there as well.
Right.
I think that's possibly also true at the time, you know, when we're trying to put our finger on why it didn't land. I think there's probably an element here of, like I said earlier, what's popular? Mummies are popular, right? Because we've got the Brendan Fraser Mummy movie kicking around roughly around about this time. This is maybe slightly after, but it's in the zeitgeist.
Kind of the same time, isn't it?
It's in the zeitgeist, right? Mummies were a thing in the late 90s. But the problem is, by the time this then gets made and put out there, like when you're working for a young audience, you know,
moments pass.
They move on so quickly. So, like, maybe older teens and adults were kind of into Mummies at this time then, but they're already on to fucking Big Bad Beetleborgs or whatever is coming next. Like, if you're going to catch lightning in a bottle, it's a kind of a strange scenario, isn't it, when you're working with children, where you don't necessarily catch the lightning in the bottle, you have to engineer it. You almost have to Frankenstein that shit. Yeah, you have to put it there, and then everything else just basks in your glory for a little while. So I think maybe it missed the boat slightly there. I do think it's also partly that it falls into no man's land. Like you mentioned gargoyles, and I think that's right. It falls into no man's land where it's not quite childish enough for young kids.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit too old. It's a little bit too young then for older kids. It's, you know, because you've got all of those horror elements and stuff, and the action sequences, like I said, are quite suspenseful. The storytelling is quite sophisticated for what it is, you know. It's not fucking amazing, but it's more than your average, you know. It's more than Turtles or something, for instance, then, or Mighty Ducks. It's more than your average Monster of the Week. But at the same time, it's still a dopey action show with mummies making jokes like "Let's kick tut" and things like that.
Yeah.
So it's got a bit of a weird no man's land where, you know, unless you're us, really. You know, and there's a lot of us out there, don't get me wrong, but we're not the general populace is the problem. And if this is going to catch on, it needs to be. Like I said, I was watching this as a 18-19 year old and fucking loving it. I thought it was great then. I've really enjoyed it now as well, but I'm not supposed to be the target audience is the thing either.
No, that's it, that's the problem. And I mean, I think that the other thing I felt with it as well is that I mentioned earlier on, there's a lot of almost learning almost of history to it. And for whatever reason, a lot of people shy away from that. I mean, personally, I'm a big fan of edutainment. And if you can watch something that's entertaining and keeps you occupied, but also you're learning shit without realizing it, sort of, you know, sinking in via osmosis, that's a really good fucking thing to do. And if you can make that product, that's a really clever, really good thing to do. But generally, people don't want that because people either think they're too smart for it or they think they're being preached at.
Yeah.
So it's a really difficult one. But yeah, I've been a couple of years younger than you. I was 14-ish watching this, I think. And yeah, I got quite a lot out of it. And having gone back to it now at 40 plus, I'm looking at thinking, actually, yeah, I can see why, I can remember why I like this. I can remember the elements there. Mm. And then you look at, for example, some of the things they bring in. So it's not just the fish out of water in terms of the mummies being in our time, but also the things that they bring in from their, you know, from Egyptian culture, the thing about the cat, you know, the history with the cats and stuff like that. All that is thrown in there as well. Now you've got the scarab's staff it's an adder or an asp. All these type of things they bring in, they seem incidental. And if you're not looking at it as a, you know, in any sort of context, you're thinking, okay, well, that's cool. He's got a snake staff, a bit like Jafar. But actually, you go back and you look at some of the artifacts that have been recovered from ancient Egypt, that type of thing was a thing.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, they're not whacking you over the head with it. It's just part of the character. You know, if you're looking at it on a very surface level, it's part of the character design. And it's only if you want to delve into it a bit deeper and you want to start looking at, you know, pharaohs and some of the stories. You know. And again, some of the fucking stories that come out of ancient Egypt, they could be Shakespeare.
Yeah.
No, so you look at it in that context. Actually, yeah, I'm getting something out of this. Yeah. And that's where I've come at it from this time.
Yeah, and I mean, as the show progresses as well, and we do get more kind of Monster of the Week episodes, they are usually based around an Egyptian god or deity. They pull a god through into modern times. And you know, they change the name usually slightly because they're in modern
very
times.
Slightly, yeah,
but they'll bring a god through, and that's what the mummies will fight. So, you know, there's that to it as well. And actually, for a show that is so steeped in ancient Egyptian culture, it just, you know, because it has to be, it's intrinsic. Like, we're not qualified to make this judgment by any stretch, but I'm actually pleasantly surprised by its reluctance to, you know, fall back on walk like an Egyptian and pyramids. And, you know, it's relatively, I think, culturally sensitive. You could argue that maybe it's whitewashed a little bit, but you know, they're certainly not falling back on hackneyed stereotypes of Egyptian culture. Like you say, there's historical reference for this.
Yeah, you know? But at the same time, they're not doing what Mighty Ducks did, where they're just trying to fit everything into a mid-90s mold. Mm. Where you've got the sarcastic one, you've got the fun one, you've got the clever one, you've got the brooding one. They've just gone, right, well, these are what the characters are like, based on what they would have been then. If they're the pharaoh's bodyguards or the prince's bodyguards, they would be this. This would be their stations. This would be their level of education. This would be how much they know about stuff. This would be their, how they worked, how they, you know, all of that is there, rather than putting these identikit models in like we had in Mighty Ducks last week, where they've gone, oh, well, yeah, well, you can't say cowabunga because that's taken, so we'll just find some other shitty catchphrase instead. They haven't done any of that.
No. And I think what they do as well is, yes, they take your stereotypical team makeup, no doubt about it. But I think the spin they put on each of those characters is generally quite unique as well. And they find a reason, like they're not just like that because that's what they need to be for the team. Like we mentioned earlier on, you know, with Jakal and his family. They find a reason why he's the stoic leader and why he's always so conscientious and why things have to be, because he feels like he's let so many people down. There's a reason for that. We understand it. To be fair, Turtles also does this very well. Most of the knockoffs don't, but you always understand in Turtles why Leo is the way he is, because he feels like he's got the weight of the rest of his family on his shoulders. And So they do that, right? So you've got that with Jakal. When you look at Wrath then as well, you know, and stereotypically when we get the kind of the inventor character then, they're kind of slightly kooky and super brainy, and they take him completely the other way. Like he's very condescending. He's very, like, he's quite spiky as well. Like he's very, very condescending. And that's not the usual archetype for that character. It's almost the complete reverse of that. That was,
and even with Armin as well. So normally, where you've got a tank, they're just there. They're Panthro. They're there to beat the living fuck out of stuff.
Yes,
and they're the strong one. They pick stuff up. They knock all the doors open. All this type of stuff. And with Panthro, they gave him the, you know, they sort of made him the inventor as well. So they kind of merged those characters. With Armin, they've gone, okay, well, yeah, he is a tank and he fights, but also he's the teacher. He's the one teaching the prince how to fight and how to defend himself and all this stuff that he will need, you know, he needs to learn in the world. So again, they make him more useful than just saying, well, yeah, he's the one that if we can't work out how to get out of a fight, he's going to punch things really fucking hard.
Yeah. And I also really, it's such a small touch, but I really like the character design there as well of like, actually he's missing his arm because he's lost it in battle.
Yes.
And when he powers up, he gets a giant metal arm.
Big fucking gold thing.
Yeah, I really like that. I think that was a really cool visual touch as well of like, that shows you the level of powering up. I mean, he's still badass without it, but when he powers up, all of a sudden he's got this, this giant arm.
But one thing I did like, there was an episode with him as well where obviously there was a point throughout the series, there were points where they focused on different mummies. There was one with him where they basically did exactly the opposite of what they'd been doing. They challenged his worth.
Yes.
So yeah, okay, well, you're the big strong one, but so what? And there's almost a hint. I can't remember which episode it was. There's the last one I watched today. There's almost a hint where they sort of give him something. It's almost like depression. It's like this whole sort of existential crisis with him.
Mm.
Where actually it's like, oh, fuck, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm just the big, heavy thing that knocks things over. And what do I bring to the team? This is why the prince died. Because, again, I let him down. I wasn't able to do that. I'm still not able to. All I'm doing is watching fucking TV.
Yeah.
I'm watching the Magic Box. That's all I'm doing. And there's a lot gone into that, which, again, they didn't need to do. They could have quite easily fallen into Monster of the Week.
Yeah, but they don't. They spend
a lot of time with the characters, which other shows possibly wouldn't have.
Yeah, and, you know, even when you look at Nefertina as well, who obviously from some aspect, you can just point at Nefertina and say, ha-ha, Tolkien. But they actually call that out immediately, like in the first episode when she shows up, like especially in the culture they were in as well, you know, when she's like, she's the chariot driver and she's a warrior and stuff like that. But they call her out straight away, like she has to hide who she is. She has to pretend to be a man because otherwise she is never going to be accepted. That's a pretty bold statement for a late 90s cartoon to be making.
Yeah, especially your first episode.
Yeah.
Your introduction to this character is, oh, right, okay, what do you mean him? That's clearly a girl.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's really good. And she's a very interesting character then as well. As soon as she does come through, she's the one that instantly takes to modern culture because she's so used to having to kind of
adapt
and fit in, and be something other, that she just takes to it straight away. These characters are very interesting. Like they've put so much work into them, and especially in those first few episodes, I think
the first four is kind of like its own arc, isn't it?
It's up
until the eclipse. It's kind of its own origin story, effectively.
It is, and I kept thinking in watching those first four episodes. You know, they're really zippy as well. Like they dart along. Like I say, it's not hilarious, but the gags come relatively thick and fast as well, and they're fine, you know they're good,
they're functional.
Yeah, they're functional. We get all the characters as well, and it just felt like actually there's a really good fucking movie in this, like a live action movie.
Yeah,
you know, it's definitely got that feel of a fish out of water kind of family adventure film. You know,
yeah, definitely. I mean, it's what you'd have seen in a sort of in a 90s film franchise.
Yes, definitely,
very clear. Unfortunately, they did release those first four episodes after it aired. There were the first home release you had was the first four episodes sold as a package as a movie.
Okay.
But then it was absolutely panned because the biggest complaint was this isn't a movie. This is four episodes of a TV show, and obviously the flow is different because your pacing is and where you put things. That was all kind of off. But because of that, then it was panned across the board because it was a shit film. Because it wasn't written that way in the first place.
Yeah.
But then people took that as being, well, it's a shit film, so why am I going to bother?
Yeah, and I can see how you would judge that harshly as a film, because it's four episodes of a...
Yeah, it's not a film, is the problem.
And even as an animated movie, if you were to package them together and you sell it as an animated movie, then, as we say, and the budget isn't there and the animation quality isn't there, the writing and the voice talent is definitely there. The voice talent is excellent.
Yes.
But, you know, it's always going to look slightly cheap, so there'd be a tendency to dump on that straight away. But, you know, from a live-action movie standpoint, you know, I don't think it's an accident that Ivan Reitman's name is on the credits here. Like, it tracks. You can very much see this in that kind of Ghostbusters family action movie vein. That's
definitely
the feel you get from this. And and watching those first four episodes, that was what I was taken away from. It was like, oh, I really wish someone would make a movie. Even now, I wish somebody would make a movie of this, because it would be fucking excellent. I would absolutely watch it. Like, it's got so much, I think, untapped potential as a franchise because it ended so early.
Yes.
I think there's definitely space for this to be... because it's a classic tale as well, that kind of, you know, fish out of water tale. We see it all the time in...
Well that's it. It's framed as in that's your thematic work, but you've also got a very definite narrative as well. You have the reincarnated prince who was he was murdered by somebody looking for immortality. They gained immortality, but then they were punished for it. Again, there's lots of classic literature on that as well. So you've got your story where your villain is out to capture the prince to kill him again, so he gets it, and he gets his immortality. He's then learning about all this stuff because he's been reincarnated 50 million times, which, you know, in the last 4,500 years. Then you've got your fish out of water as well. The elements are there. So your main and subplots are in there straight away, and you just need somebody to pass over and go, right, okay, well, this is the 80 minutes and change we had of four episodes. How do we make that into a 90-minute family action movie?
Yeah. It's just about working
that connective tissue
out. It is, yeah. It's working out that connective tissue between the episodes, dropping a few bits out, putting a few bits in. And I think...
A lot of it, to be honest, is just moving it around. I think a lot of it is there. It just needs shuffling a bit.
Yeah, because, there are, I think it's the second episode where you spend a great deal of time in the past, whereas if you're doing that in a movie, you would probably intersperse that as the prince is coming to learn about his memories and stuff like that, rather than spend a great big chunk of time that you'd certainly open in ancient Egypt rather than open with Unearthed in the Tomb as well. You'd open with...
You open in ancient Egypt, and then you come back after your credits.
Yes.
You see Scarab being locked in, and then you open the credits 3,000 years later where somebody's found the tomb.
Yeah, you do, yeah. And I just can't help but pine for that movie. Like, I don't know where this sits, but I would watch the fuck out of it. Like, I would absolutely be there for it. And I think it's a potential franchise in the making. But then we couldn't even get a second season of the TV show, let alone, nobody's going to fucking pick this up as a movie, unfortunately. No. And that's a shame. I did touch on the voice talent there. Aside from, there are some names in it. Everybody is very, very good. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it's not like you've got A-listers here either. You know, aside from Cree Summer, who's done a hell of a lot over a career. A lot of them are just very fucking good. It's as simple as that. They've cast the right people in those roles. The guy,
and again, compare that to last week with Mighty Ducks, whereby they threw fucking money at it.
Yeah.
They've got some very good, they've got some very big names in it, but none of them stand out as being particularly exceptional in that show.
No, I mean,
it's all functional and passable, whereas everyone here is very good at what they're delivering.
Yeah, they completely understand the character they play in. I think Jakal, in particular, we've mentioned him plenty of times, is Dale Wilson.
Yeah.
That plays Jakal. I've looked him up on IMDb. He's had a good career. Don't get me wrong, but it's not like we're going, oh, he's the guy from Thundercats, or he's the guy. You know, it's not one of those. You know, by God, that's a good performance. And again, it's not original. He's got that kind of classic, almost Batman-like kind of stoic action hero voice. But he dials into it so well, and he's got such gravitas. Like, he's just a really interesting fucking character as our lead, essentially, on what could be just another cookie cutter phone it in performance. And yes, it's definitely not, you know, so I think the voice talents are really good. We've talked about the music. We've talked about the animation. Unfortunately, that is the only weak link that I can see is the animation. And like I said, I don't see it as being that bad.
No, it's not. I say it's certainly not the worst thing we've watched. I think it's noticeable. I said, ironically, it's notable with the humans rather than the things that don't actually exist.
Yeah.
But it's against that Uncanny Valley thing, isn't it, where things don't look, they never look right. Well, they look near enough, but not
quite exactly
right.
It's exactly that, so then, isn't it? You don't know how a mummy would move, so you just, you accept whatever you show.
You kind of take it that that's what it looks like because that's what they've done. But when you've got people running away from an attack in the street and they're running like fucking toddlers with their arms flailing everywhere because, for whatever reason, the person animating them doesn't know where to put their arms. Mm. Or doesn't know that actually their knees aren't going to pop out at 45 degrees from their hips. They're going to be running. No, their knees are going to be pointing forward while they're running. It's that type of thing where we see that all the time. We see people walking. We see people running. We see people holding fucking placards and signs because we see it every day. So we know it doesn't look right when they do it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, unfortunately, because of the subject and the material and the fact that it's so kind of enraptured with this idea of ancient Egypt, they kind of lock themselves off from the answer to that, because the answer to that is to take a more Japanese approach and to drop frames and go hyper stylized, you know, and go for that almost sort of motion comic effect if you can't animate a human that well. And they can't do that here because we're not in that. That's not the culture we're going for. So it doesn't fit. And that's a shame, because that would be the easy way around that. But then it would be a different show. And it would not fit whatsoever.
No, that's right. And I think if that's the only knock I can really come up with, is that it, you know, in places it doesn't look great and it looks a bit cheap. I'm quite happy with that, to be honest.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, I've looked for faults, I'll be honest, because I feel like last week we were pretty harsh on Mighty Ducks. I think it was all warranted, but I think we were quite harsh on Mighty Ducks. I mean, we didn't, by no means did we shit on it, but, you know.
No, but we called out what was there to call out.
Yeah. So I was very conscious that, like, in terms of balance, I didn't want this week there to be, oh, this thing's fucking brilliant. It's what, you know, thank God we're onto something good. But other than the animation, like I said, nothing's excellent. Nothing's like, this is the best in its class.
No,
but it's all very, very fucking good other than the animation, and I can give that a pass.
I think that kind of, that's kind of a positive thing, though, because if it was the standout, if it was the one that everything else is going to be compared to, then you find yourself looking for the flaws, and you can't then enjoy it because you're too busy looking for problems. And if you come down and say, this is the fucking worst thing ever, you're there looking for the things to either ridicule it or to say, actually, it's not that bad because this pulls it back and this recovers it. When it's so clearly down the middle of the road, it's not good, it's not bad, but it performs and it does what it needs to do. Almost to the point where it goes under the radar. That's, like, for me, that's always a good measure, because I'm not there sitting there thinking, fuck, there's something I need to be looking for in this. I can just sit down and watch it and enjoy it.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. What this actually is, you know, in fitting with this show as well, like, yes, it's from the late 90s, but what this actually is the quintessential Saturday morning cartoon. It's the one that's in a block with loads of other stuff that's not the standout. But, you know, secretly, it's the one you're always quite looking forward to on Saturday morning.
Yeah, nobody's turning it off. If it comes on, nobody's turning it off. Nobody's going to have to make the series.
No, exactly. And you're right. It's those shows, I think, that you remember with particular fondness. Because, we all look back on Thundercats and Turtles and He-Man and smile. But the thing is, they've never really gone away. And I say this on the show a lot with those big shows that we all love. Like, and I love them too. But they've never gone away for me. They've always been there. I've always watched them my entire life, because they're always there, and I've got the DVDs and there's reruns on, you know, Batman the Animated Series is another one, you know, all of these sort of things.
Yeah.
So they don't go away. Whereas this does kind of slip the net, and every now and again it just pops into your mind, pops into your radar, and you're like, oh yeah, It's that one, you know. Yeah. That, and that is the quintessential Saturday morning cartoon for me. It's that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not Thundercats or He-Man or anything like that. It's that filler show that they had because it was cheap, so they could stick it in the middle of Live and Kicking. You know, because it was cheap, basically. That's your Saturday morning cartoon.
It's the one you have your marquee one. I mean, I can't remember what was on the same time as this on ITV, but certainly comparing it to Live and Kicking on BBC, you'd have your X-Men. Mm. That's your standout one. And then you've got Clarissa later on.
Yeah.
And this is the one they stick on in the middle because they've got half hour to fill.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Or in the afternoon block, it's the one that you stick on before news round. Do you know what I mean? Before you get to the last thing of whatever it was that day, whether it was Blue Peter or Grange Hill or whatever, before you get to your jewel in the crown, this is the one that you stick in, you know? I've had a great fucking time with it. I think it's great. I will comfortably put it in the top half of shows that we've looked at on this fucking show.
Oh God, yeah.
And it's certainly better than most similar cartoons, I think.
I'd agree with that.
You know,
I'd agree with that. I mean, I've the only disappointment I've got is obviously because we we've done this back to back with Mighty Ducks, so we've done two shows, and then we'll have a break next week to do whatever's next week, and then we'll come back to SMPD again. It's the sheer volume of shit we have to watch, and having watched Mighty Ducks last week, I'm not going to have time to watch more.
Yeah.
At the moment, I will try and go back to it. I think that I've probably watched about 8 or 9.
Yeah.
In the last day or so, and I would quite like to watch more. I'm probably not going to watch all 42 because of time. But I'm just again, we also say this: if it was on, I wouldn't be turning it off. If I have the time, I'll pick up a couple more, but I don't know when I'll get to it. And that's disappointing because I think that I've enjoyed this far more than I expected to. I was very worried, as we tend to be with shows that we really like. I was really worried about the fact that this had the potential to be absolute dog shit.
Yeah.
And I was very, very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, me too. I think that's accurate. You know, we've got to watch, we've got to move on to the next show. We've got to move on and watch whatever it is we're doing on Mario as well. So we don't have tons of time. Fortunately for me, the next show is one that gets watched around this house quite a lot at the moment anyway. So there's a certain amount of that gets absorbed through osmosis. So that'll give me a little bit of time. But I'm definitely going to watch more. If there was, if I could get hold of a box set, I think I would, you know. And as you said, I don't know that I'd do all 40. But I'd certainly dip into quite a few. Wouldn't turn it off if it was on reruns. And, you know, it's in my YouTube history now. That playlist is there. So maybe I'll dip into that now and again when I've got a spare 20 minutes or so.
That's fair.
Which is a thing I never have. But if I did, then, you know.
Well, that's the thing. Now there's a little person in tow. You don't have any time anymore.
No, none whatsoever. But it's been a good time. I've enjoyed this.
Yeah,
I really wish I could have watched more.
And it's one as well. I mean, I've been speaking to people the last couple of days about this, a lot of people have gone, "Oh, I think I remember that. What was that one about?"
Mm.
And so I'd really like to know what people remember of this. If people have watched it or if people are playing along at home, what their recollections are. Because I mean, I've thoroughly enjoyed this, and I remembered a lot more than I thought it would. I'd be really keen to catch up with people on that. As always, get in touch on Twitter at SMPDpod, wherever you get your podcasts from. Like, subscribe, leave us a message, we'll be back to you if you can. Until next time.
Let's kick tut.
He has a long laser hanging by the Western Gate. He has a long laser gonna save the world today. The Egyptian way, the mummy's alive.